Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Not sure if you're aware, but last night it was announced that there'd be a three-part docu-series on Showtime called Shut Up and Dribble. It's going to debut in October, the same month that LeBron James is going to suit up for the LA Lakers. The series is going to look at the changing role of athletes in the current political culture and the cultural climate against the backdrop of the NBA. James is the executive producer of the series, along with Maverick Carter and his agent, Rich Paul. Gotham Chopra, who did Kobe Bryant's Muse in 2015, also that was a Showtime show, will direct the series. So, like, look, they got, like, a legit guy doing this thing. There's also an HBO show called The Shop. That's the barbershop deal, right, that he had previously had and argued with people that somehow he invented this barbershop talk thing. Remember that? Then apparently there's a CBS show called Million Dollar Mile. He's the executive producer of a competition series that has been ordered by CBS. Yeah, Million Dollar Mile contestants will have a chance to win $1 million every time they run the Million Dollar Mile. Standing in their way is a challenging course and group of elite athletes with one mission: stop the contestants from winning money at all costs. Right, so... And it's going to come from the executive producers of Big Brother, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, yeah, and apparently there's some other show that's going to be on Netflix. Yeah, he's got another one on Netflix. Like, LeBron James is going to have a show on Netflix, have a show on CBS, have a show on Showtime, have a show on HBO. To those of you not paying attention, to have a show on Showtime and HBO... albeit different, one's a docu-series, you know, the other one is a kind of different type of show, and then the one on Netflix is going to be it's going to be like a situation comedy, not a rom-com, a situation comedy, and then have a game show, essentially every type of show he's going to have with a different network. That would be like, hey, look, yes, I wear Nike shoes, but I wear Adidas shorts, I wear Stance socks, and my headband is provided by somebody altogether different. So LeBron Takes LA is really amazing. And by the way, it does fit into the narrative that people have said, you know what? Basketball is not the most important thing to him. Think about even what LeBron James is saying himself. I'm more than an athlete. Companies have done this before and they have failed. For example, if you get away from your core audience will sometimes lose interest. The two most prominent examples of that are the NHL and NASCAR. How popular is the NHL and NASCAR? Look, they were on fire in the 90s. On fire. Of course, Los Angeles was helped out by the fact that they got Wayne Gretzky. Once the great one came to town, all of a sudden L.A., for some reason, cared about hockey. The Kings have won two Stanley Cups, but they are not even a blip on the sports radar in Los Angeles. Remember the Atlanta Thrashers? Think about the disaster that Phoenix has been in the National Hockey League. They departed cities like Winnipeg. And others in Canada suddenly were not important to the league. Now, look, the NHL has done a really nice job of getting back to their core audience as they've kind of retracked and they're back in Winnipeg and they're doing well on, you know, they have their own NHL network on NBCSN, and, you know, they got the outdoor game every year right around Christmas time. But the fact is that the NHL got away from their core audience. And even though we like hockey, we don't know hockey. We don't know anything about it. Why? Because nobody plays hockey growing up. Nobody talks about hockey. It's too many players that we didn't watch growing up. We can't see their faces. We can only see their numbers. It's not that hockey isn't a cool sport. It is. Just, look, I've been doing this for 15 years. Nobody gives a damn about hockey. Same thing with NASCAR. NASCAR was big in the South, big in the Midwest. Then they go to Fontana and California Speedway, which is awesome. And don't get me wrong, there's just as many rednecks that love race car, that love racing in Fontana as there are in Talladega. But what you do is, same thing as the NHL. You end up ticking off your core audience. They're like, yo, you've forgotten us. You've gone Hollywood. You've gone to all these other stops instead of paying attention to what's important. And NASCAR has seen their ratings plummet, even as they try and get back to what their core is. Now, look, there are other factors that play for the NHL. Overexpansion. The fact is that it's just a hard watch on TV. It's hard to pick up the puck. It's hard to know what's going on when you didn't grow up watching the sport. Like, there's some other factors. But the fact is that the NHL got away from their core audience and overexpanded into markets that weren't familiar and that weren't part of that core audience. And one of the reasons that there's a bunch of reasons the NHL is far more healthy now. One is they've set their salary structure a lot more soundly. But I think the biggest part is they've gotten back to their core audience. NASCAR essentially will do the same. And that's the danger of what LeBron James is doing. It's not that he can't do a movie here, Space Jam 2. It's not that he can't produce a show there. It's once you start producing multiple shows, once you start doing appearances and movies and movie premieres, plus your father, and he is an engaged father. I'm not being critical of the fact that he shows up at his son's games, but there's a reason. There's more than one reason that he doesn't want to practice. He only wants to do his personal workouts. Like, he is time regimented. Look, dude, I got 2 hours. Hour to work out, hour to work on my game. And then I'm out. And then I'm a corporation. I got all this other stuff. So all of those things that some people have been, even what Charles Barkley said. Right? Charles Barkley says it, and you think he's a hater. He's old school. Was he wrong? What's more important to him, winning basketball games or being a mogul? I mean, look, you said, Colin said all year long, he wants to be a mogul. He wants to be a mogul. Now you are a mogul. Can you satisfy your core audience? Because what makes LeBron James, what validated LeBron James calling himself the king at a very young age was winning NBA championships, right? And the more things you throw on somebody's plate, the less you pay attention to the basketball team. He's already gone to an organization which is not a perfect fit for a coach who has not coached a team into the playoffs yet, who wasn't hired by the front office. You got this aisle of misfit toys that you've collected, Lance Stevenson and, Rajon Rondo and others on that bench. Then you got the starters. You got LeVar Ball. You got all this other stuff, which is your core, which has made you what you are. Like, look, say what you want about Michael Jordan. It's really cool to be critical of Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan did have business interests. Michael Jordan did play golf. He did smoke cigars. He did play poker. He did all these other things. But you know what else he did? He did the Breakfast Club every day. He had the guys over at his house where he had a gym and he worked out. He did go to practice. He never lost track of what the core of what he was is, right? Never lost sight of that. And maybe the reason that he retired was he was ticked at the Bulls. Maybe it was because he was done, or maybe it was because he knew that was the last time he could give all of his attention, or the most important part of his attention, to his sport. Because part of the lore to Jordan was never lost in the finals. Now, maybe LeBron, it doesn't matter to some. If he never gets back, we can make the excuse that it's in the West. If he never gets back, we can make the excuse that he was coached by Luke Walton and it was Magic and Rob Pelinka's inability to put a team around him. But the idea that anyone who says LeBron James is going to the Lakers for basketball reasons, all of these announcements, Showtime, HBO, Netflix, CBS, in succession, even the interview after he opens a school in Akron to which he says, maybe I'll run for president, only feeds into the narrative and makes it more believable when he says, I'm more than a basketball player. Maybe you don't want to play basketball anymore. These people that say, well, basketball is not who I am. It isn't. I'm not saying that doesn't diminish, it diminishes you as a human being to say you're a great basketball player, but that's what made you. That's what made you.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Scott Frost joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Coach, how are you?
Doing well. How are you, Doug?
Good, man. Look, I mean, being a head coach in Nebraska is obviously anybody's dream that plays there, but has it? Do you have to wait till your first Saturday on the field at Memorial Stadium to really to let it sink in, or has it sunk in already?
No, I think it's sunk in. You know, it sinks in when I'm around so many people that I know and care about, and so many people that care about me and our staff and our team and our program. And this is home for me. Just yesterday at practice, my brother's in town visiting and brought his family. My parents were there. Coach Osborne was there. Some friends from junior high in McCook, Nebraska were at practice. And we get to do a special job, and it's very rewarding because we get to try to help young people be better. And it's even more rewarding when you're doing it around friends and family.
What was it like as, you know, coaching, you know, going back to coaching in Oregon or even at Central Florida? You pay attention to what's going on back home, but you also have a job to do, and you lock in, and whatever program you work for becomes your program. When did the possibility of being the head coach in Nebraska really start to maybe become a reality?
You know, not until really late. You know, some people might not believe it, but I told everybody all along I wasn't thinking about any other job while I was at UCF, and we were loyal to that standard as a coaching staff because we wanted to do everything we could for the kids that were working hard for us. And the bad part about that was right at the end of the season when decisions had to be made, it kind of just landed on us at the end because we hadn't spent any time thinking about it. You know, Nebraska was always a program that I watched, but, you know, I kind of felt disconnected from it for a long time because there weren't people in the building at Nebraska that I knew, and there weren't a lot of people there that had been there when I was playing. So we kind of felt apart from a little bit, and, you know, I've said this publicly a lot, but I don't think I'd be back here if the leadership hadn't changed and there were some people working on campus that had our best interests at heart and some people I wanted to work with.
Recently your home was broken into, and I know you guys are doing work on it, and that's always, you know, I got work being done in my home, and it, you know, there's the trust factor. Did somebody lock something up? And but considering, like, this is your home, it's a huge thing for you to return back to NU to be the head coach. Like, God, like, doesn't that go against, like, everything this whole thing is about, that somebody would break in and steal your stuff?
Well, what got reported was worse than what it actually was. We're living in a rental house right now, so the house that got broken into is one we weren't even in, which makes it a lot better that my wife and son weren't in the home. When we first got in there, every single one of our boxes was cut open, and everything was in a huge pile on the floor, and the police asked me what I didn't see, and I gave them a big list. As we were digging through the rubble, we found most of the stuff, and ironically, they left almost everything, and they took every piece of work and everything that I had, which kind of makes sense because I would have been surprised if a Nebraska fan would have done that to my house at this point in time. So it probably wasn't a Nebraska fan that did it, and I was happy that I didn't lose as much as we initially thought.
Did they take the Nebraska rings though?
No, there was two boxes that didn't get opened, and all of my rings were in one of those boxes. And shoot, I told people my helmet from my senior year of college at Nebraska was opened and laying on the floor and still there. And I ran out on the field on the last play of the 97 Orange Bowl, our national championship game, and grabbed the ball from Coach Osborne's last play and had it in a big display case. And they left that. All they took was all my Oregon Jordans and a couple helmets that said to Coach Frost, thanks for everything, Marcus Mariota. So I think it might have been an Oregon fan or a sneakerhead that did it, but I didn't lose that much.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Okay, let's talk about the job of rebuilding Nebraska football. What I've always it's kind of interesting on how the world kind of comes full circle. You know, back when Coach Osborne was there, when you guys were there, look, you guys were an option team, and it wasn't that, you know, you could throw the football, but you threw it kind of out of option looks, and that's, but. But as much as the spread has become synonymous with college football, people, I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong, they misassociate some types of the spread because, like, look, what Baylor does, that's just the veer, and then you got one-on-one on the outside. Like, that's, there's a lot of option looks. It's kind of like option football has just evolved to 2015. So whereas when Bill Callahan tried to come in and scrap the whole thing and become a pro-passing game, or even the Mike Riley comes in and tries to have a pro-passing game, there is a way to link the old and the new. Is that a fair assessment of some of the things that you've done everywhere you've been and comparing it to when Coach Osborne was winning national championships?
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to thank you for saying that I could throw the ball, because there would be a lot of people that would disagree with that.
Dude, I saw the hold on. I saw the flea flicker. I was sitting in my dorm room. Am I supposed to not remember that enough that
the run game works, and that's about it. But no, you know, college football evolves, offenses evolve, and to be honest with you, getting back here and getting in the weeds of it, a lot of what hasn't been right with Nebraska football, it's been self-inflicted. It's been decisions to go different directions than what had worked at Nebraska for a long time. And what we do on offense certainly doesn't look like what I ran in offense when I was in college, but there's a lot of similarities schematically, just like you said, between a spread option offense and a power option offense. And the biggest one that we got to get back is the grittiness, the toughness, the work ethic, the physicality. You can be physical in any type of offense. You don't have to have a fullback in the backfield to do that. And, you know, we're taking our first few steps, but I can't wait to have a really physical football field on the field again, a Nebraska-looking football team out there.
Okay, so you mentioned Nebraska-looking football team. So the couple things you always had was, right, in addition to the running backs and the fullbacks and athletic quarterbacks, you had a great offensive line, but you also had the black shirts on defense. How difficult is it going to be to rebuild on the defensive side of the ball, especially considering, you know, the move to the Big Ten, while financially it's a windfall, it does take you out of the state of Texas, you know, on a weekly basis. It does kind of change how you can recruit. And again, going back to when you were in school, you guys were great in the Northeast, big in Jersey in recruiting. And even that's changed, not just with Penn State being in the Big Ten, but also, you know, Big East teams becoming ACC teams. How difficult is it going to be to get the level of athleticism in that defensive backfield that you guys had when Nebraska was great?
I don't think it's going to be difficult at all. A lot of the things that you're saying, I've heard a bunch, and to be honest with you, I think they're excuses. We went through this last recruiting cycle and only had about 2 weeks to work before the first signing day and 6 weeks before the second. And I love where we finished, and a lot of those kids are on the field and doing great things already. We recruited kids from Texas, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, New Jersey, Minnesota, Nebraska, Colorado, California. People are going to want to come, especially if we do things the right way, which we're going to do things the way that we're going to. Kids are going to want to come, and which league we're playing in isn't going to make a difference. We just have to make sure that we're functioning the right way. And you said building, rebuilding, but to me it's more about building. We got to build the roster. We got to build each individual kid. When you looked at Nebraska teams back when Nebraska was great, there was a hallmark, and that was we were bigger and stronger and better physically conditioned than everybody else. And a lot of that work in the weight room hasn't been there in recent years. We're going to do more with kids once we get to campus than almost anybody else in the country. We have the people and the resources set up to do that, and we just need some time to get it done.
You know, it's interesting. I interviewed for my alma mater going back, was like a year and a half ago, and my wife's hesitance was, she's like, look, they love you back there, but what if it doesn't work, right? Like, what if it doesn't work? Like, can you go home again? Did that ever creep into your conversations with Nebraska, or at least into your mindset and your conversation with your wife in returning home?
Yeah, it's definitely more of a fishbowl here, and we definitely thought about that. You know, if things go the way that we're planning on them going, it's going to be one of the best experiences of my life. But it's a little scary not to succeed, especially when you're in your hometown. All we can do is put our heads down and work and make sure that doesn't happen. And I love what we've done already and the progress that we've made. And also tell you that, you know, any thought about that was far outweighed by the opportunity to be in the same hometown as my parents and Coach Osborne and people that I care about. That outweighs any potential negative.
Okay, so Matt Davidson has made basically a career out of that one catch, right? I mean, like, he has. He played basketball, he played football.
He's made a life out of that one catch.
Right. And for people who don't know, Matt Davidson, he's a color commentator, I think, on football and basketball. And, like, look, you threw for over 1,000 yards, but you guys didn't throw it a ton. He makes this one incredible catch where it hit off a Nebraska kid's foot. I'll never forget where I was. I'm in my dorm room at Oklahoma State, Bennett Hall. And it's a Saturday, and I'm, like, screaming around, running. And I was a Nebraska fan. It was just a super, super exciting football game. Okay, so how have you been able to kind of convey what it's going to be like if, in fact, you get to where you want to get to your current group? Because, you know, like, look, they've only seen kind of the negativity. And though even though people show up and it's a big thing, they don't know what it's like when – it's what it was like when you were there. Have you been able to craft a message so that they can understand it?
We're getting there. I think it's lessons that we all have to learn and that we have to keep teaching. You brought up Matt Davidson. He's a perfect example of a Nebraska kid that came here and worked, became a great player, is known throughout the state, is popular because of who he is and what he accomplished. Nebraska's a fishbowl that because it's the only show in town, the entire state's behind it. We sold out a spring game in 36 hours with 87,000 seats.
Amazing.
Because people are excited about what's going on. But we're trying to get Nebraska looking and feeling like it used to, and a lot of that's our responsibility to educate and improve on the football program and the football players. But I'll tell you this, wherever I go around the country, I see other fans, and they talk about how great Nebraska fans are, that they cheer for the other team as they're coming off the field, that they're polite, that they're kind.
It's uncomfortable how nice they are. What is going on?
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable how polite, how much they pay attention. I remember, and I think this is before you went there. Yeah, this was before you went there. Maybe when you were at Stanford. Remember when Washington came in and Don James' team kicked their ass and the Nebraska fans gave them a standing ovation when they ran off the field? I was like, what is the matter with you people? It's crazy.
I was at that game. I was sitting in the south end zone. Listen, I want Nebraska to look like it did before in all areas. And I think maybe even the fan base has gotten a little away from that in just in the last few years. As a fan base, as a football team, as a football program, you talk about how polite Nebraska people are. If I was a recruit's parent, this is where I'd want to send them because of factors like that. They're not going to get booed in their own stadium, even if you're a visiting player. There's so many things special about Nebraska, but its best asset is its people. And I want the game day Saturdays to look like the game day Saturdays that I remember.
There's no doubt that I think college football needs Nebraska to be back to where it was, especially the Big Ten, that side of the Big Ten. You said, hey, next year we think we can compete for the Big Ten championship or for the Big Ten West, right? Was that what you said?
I think it's going to be a steady build. I really do. I love the progress that I'm seeing already on the field. I love how our team looks completely different physically than they did in January. But I'm not kicking the can down the road to next year. We got too many competitive people that want to prove something, and I can't wait for this year because I think people are going to recognize the strides that this program has made, and I think we're going to have a team that's not just going to lay down and look for next year. I can't wait to start competing this year, but however good we are this year, we better be better than that the next year and even better the following.
Yeah, did you see what Tanner Farmer said at the media session? I think it was yesterday. He said, I don't just want to win a Big Ten championship. I don't want to win the championship. That's my goal. A lot of people saying winning a national championship isn't a realistic goal. I'm not about being realistic. I want it all. Go big or go home. And then he dropped the mic. It's not bad.
Well, you don't want any kids playing for you that don't feel that way. So I love that he says that. I love that spirit. We had a whole team full of those guys when I was playing, and anything short of the things that he's talking about wasn't good enough. So if I can have 150 kids thinking that way, I'll take them.
Well, listen, we wish you the best of luck. The schedule makers did you no favors. For people who haven't been paying attention, you know, of the top teams, you play Michigan on the road, you play Wisconsin on the road, you play Ohio State on the road, you play Iowa on the road this year. You don't get Penn State this year, but man, that's a Whew, there's all sorts of that's a doozy. Akron,
I can't wait for the day when people are saying, "Oh, the schedule makers did us bad. We have to play Nebraska."
Great stuff, Scott. Thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to talking to you in the year, and can't wait to see your football team on September 1st against Akron. Appreciate you being our guest.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, Scott Frost, head coach of Nebraska.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
All right, speaking of dumb, there are only like 200 people, but this is the way it works in 2018. Right? In 2018, when there's a small protest, but it gets put on Facebook or it gets put on Twitter or it gets put on TV, we all of a sudden freak out. So the first thing is, there's 100,000 plus fans at Ohio State games on Saturdays, and there's only like somewhere around 100 to 200 people at this protest rally yesterday. I'm not going to criticize Ezekiel Elliott's dad for showing up and supporting Urban Meyer because Ezekiel Elliott has had off the field issues. I'm not. I think you're looking, we're being way, there's just way too many steps to get to that. What I am going to be critical of Ezekiel Elliott's dad is the reason why he's showing up and supporting Urban Meyer. Take a listen.
Well, anybody who abuses a woman is not right, first and foremost. And I know Urban Meyer would never condone a woman being abused. So those who abuse women need to stop right now. But the truth of the matter, based on what we all know, he handled the situation according to how his job Absolutely. Required him yep. to. Yep. So to hold him in this situation where he got to deal with his emotions, not being with his boys and representing his university with the utmost integrity yeah. is wrong.
Yeah, the problem is that he's right. Everyone believes that domestic violence is wrong. And if he definitely went through the proper channels, I think I could understand some support. But the idea that Ezekiel Elliott's father knows what Urban Meyer did is laughable. That's the problem with it. We don't know. That's why they're conducting an investigation. Also, the idea is, even if he did go through the proper channels, twofold. One, you allowed a guy to be around the program that had multiple calls from his wife. Like, that's just a bad look. Just is. Like, when there's that much smoke, you'd think there's some fire. But okay, let's say he didn't do what the pictures and the digital evidence links him to doing. Okay. Or maybe he did, but Urban Meyer kicked it up the food chain or whatever. How come Urban Meyer doesn't get criticized for blatantly and obviously lying to the media and walking himself into this corner? These wounds are self-inflicted. I mean, look, the idiocy of having fake news signs in ESPN. ESPN didn't even break the story, right? Brett McMurphy was let go from ESPN and works for Satellite now, and Stadium now, excuse me, and put the story out on Facebook. So the idea that ESPN somehow is fake news. By the way, ESPN conducted an interview with, I'm defending a company I used to work for. And to the idiot who put the hashtag MeToo and then had it about football, I don't like, who creates these? It's not that if you know everything and you want to support your coach, that's fine. But you don't know. So you're blindly supporting based upon what you think and what you want, not what you know. The crazy part about it is, this is more the right. This is more the people who are, you know, anti-Me Too, and they think, well, look, this is nothing but lynch mob mentality, and we're going after anybody associated with anything ever. But they're going with their feelings, not with the facts, right? Isn't that their argument always? Isn't that the right's argument for the left, that the left always goes with feelings, not with facts? That's what the right is doing. That's what these people are doing. They're going with feelings. I think, I know. You don't know anything. You think you know Urban Meyer. Why? Because he recruited your son and coached your son for 3 years? You don't know anything. Nothing. Did you know that Zach Smith was accused of these things? Urban Meyer did. and apparently didn't do anything about it. Even if Zach Smith didn't do what he's accused of doing, the fact that he was still around the program, not getting therapy, that Urban Meyer didn't step in and say at the podium, say, look, I knew this was a toxic relationship. I urged Zach time and again to get out of it because ultimately it would come to a head, and he did not now that he lost his job. Instead, he told us he didn't know anything about it, which he obviously did, if we're to believe his story. So a man who can lie to the country at Big Ten Media Day can't lie to you because you coached his son? Okay.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I understand that sometimes you think you hear politics on sports radio and you immediately want to go like, I can't. I'm not talking politics, okay? But I'll use a political reference to make a ton of sense here. Look, I don't care who you voted for or what your political affiliation. But if you had any brains at all, and I do think that a lot of people in power have brains, or at least people around the people in power have brains. If I was telling the president, all you should do, even if you tweet, is just tweet every day, every morning, the economy. Now, look, the people who don't like Trump can say, look, the tax cuts will ultimately hurt us. They can say Obama left him the economy in great shape and rescued it from, you know, the greatest collapse since the Depression, et cetera, et cetera. But if I was advising the president, that's a winning topic. There's no fight. There's nothing. Unemployment is like 3.9%. This should be, he should be taking victory laps, high-fiving people. Get up and give a speech and just say the economy and sit back down. Nothing else. Nothing else. And you're like, no one could ever. I know. Just stand up and go, the president's here. Everybody's winning. The economy. That's it. And then walk out. Right? That was the whole idea of the guy, right? Was he's a businessman and he can fix the business. And it's pretty hard to argue. Are there factors that have helped it? Sure. Are there things that he's doing that might well actually hurt some of his success? Sure. But if for the next 2.5 years, he just said the economy and nothing else, dude would win by a landslide. Matter of fact, polling last week showed that the president had made substantial gains in the African-American community. That was before he called out LeBron James and Don Lemon, called Don Lemon the dumbest guy on TV, and said that he made LeBron James look smart, which is hard to do, like I'm a mic guy, right? Donald Trump should be congratulated right now for one. It's the greatest upset in the history of political science. Took down 15 establishment Republicans and the Clintons to win the highest office public service. Right. But instead, Republicans, many of them are fighting for their lives in midterm elections. Why is that? Because of social media, because of Twitter. Right? Because he can't help himself. Can't help himself. He wants to fight every battle. He watches TV, sees somebody say something negative about him, and he's got to come back at them. He's got to, what do they call it? He's got to clap back. Correct? Is this an accurate assessment, right? So many of the things that he does, it's about the tweets that he sends out. If somebody simply took away his Twitter, or he only tweeted out the economy every day, there's really no competition out there for him. You know who that is in sports? It's Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant has won 2 straight finals MVP. He has 2 NBA championships. He also has a previous league MVP. He's in a He's in one of the top 10 cities in the entire world in San Francisco. He is revered for his talent. Matter of fact, his pull-up jump shot as a seven-footer is widely regarded as an unstoppable, unblockable shot, the likes of which we have not seen since, you go Jordan, Kobe's fadeaway, but maybe even Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's skyhook. Like, I believe that Kevin Durant is the best player in the NBA. Why isn't he viewed as such? Is it because he left the Thunder and went to the Warriors, who had won 73 games and had beaten the Thunder? A little bit. But the truth is that trying to fight every fight on social media, trying to tell people this is who I really am and clap back at people, and first he had the burner accounts and then it was his own account. There's no difference between the two. Both should be revered. Both should be celebrated. Because if you question Kevin Durant and you say, hey, Kevin Durant, you left the Thunder, you did this, all he has to do is go, not one, but two championship rings. Not one, but two finals MVP. By the way, who was guarding him when he hit the series clinching shot in both of the past two NBA finals? That would be LeBron James. So he beat LeBron in the last two finals. Whether that was a fair fight or not doesn't even matter. None of it matters. He won two finals MVPs, two championships, has an MVP, and they're likely going to win a third. But instead of tweeting out rings or finals MVPs, or all he has to do is a GIF of his game-winning jump shot in Game 3 of either of the past two series. If he just did that, there's no arguing with it. I got nothing I can do. You can throw at me LeBron stats. You can throw at me Kobe's rings. You can do this. You can do that. But as of right now, he is king of the hill. And there is nobody taking the Warriors down next year, correct? That ain't any different than Trump.